What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast AT Injuries Round 2. This week, I've got Sean Reedy, my buddy here, John Seco, been on the podcast multiple times, and Danielle Petty, a first-timer for the Sports Medicine Broadcast. I'm your host, Jeremy Jackson. You can join the show or join the conversation on sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. Click on the link there. It has the YouTube Live. And then go to the YouTube chat thing and ask your questions, throw out your comments, or talk about Danielle's beard. She doesn't really have a beard, but everybody else does. So anyways, that was in the pre-conversation. This is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/ATInjuries2, because we did one last year. So that was AT Injuries 1 or AT Injuries. And this one is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/ATInjuries2. All right. Danielle, we're going to start with you. Tell us your athletic trainer story. How did you get to where you are right now?
So I grew up playing soccer and pretty much every other sport I could physically do. Played 2 years of college soccer. And in the middle of that, I was in a nice little car accident that landed me in the hospital for 2 years or 2 weeks. It eventually ended my playing career. And since then, I've had 9 surgeries and no longer wanted to be a physical therapist, but an athletic trainer. Because at my school, I didn't have an athletic trainer to rehab with. So I wanted to help out people that needed help and while they were playing and get them back onto the field.
All right. So tell me, where'd you go to school, grad school? And then what are the steps that got you back to where you are at ECU?
So I went to undergrad at Southwestern Illinois College. Then I transferred after my car accident. I transferred to Eastern Illinois University since they had an undergraduate athletic training program. After Eastern Illinois, I went to Texas State for grad school, got to work tennis, football, and I also taught. After grad school, I got hired on at Eastern Illinois and worked with pretty much every sport there. We had a lot of staff turnover, so we needed help wherever we could get it. And then a year ago, I took a job at East Carolina University, and I work primarily women's soccer.
All right. Very good. So we were just kind of discussing some of the craziness between the weather here, Illinois, Sean being from up in that area as well. So lots of fun there. I'm just from Texas, and everybody on the podcast knows my stories. So we're going to start with John, I'm going to start with you. I want you to tell me about your injury from start to finish. Ready?
From start to finish. So I started out in college. This story always starts the same way. I don't remember what my initial major was going to be. I think I went in, may have been like a history major or something like that, with the thought of going into maybe coaching or teaching or something like that, but I really didn't have a plan. I went to college to play football. That was my thing, and I was going to kind of just figure it out from there and, you know, wherever life took me. But that was my major at the time, was football, playing football. About 3 or 4 weeks in, I got injured. I actually ruptured my supraspinous ligament between the L4 and L5. So I wasn't laid up or anything. It was just a weird incident. It happened during a game. I think I got my head kind of caught on a shoulder pad and wasn't anything fast or anything crazy. I walked off and, we had a long defensive stand after my, series, and I just couldn't lift my neck anymore. Couldn't lift my head. Went in, got treated, saw a handful of doctors. You know, one of them said, "You're never going to play again. You should never play again." Another one said, "Well, you know what, go ahead and play." And then the other one just kind of left it up to me. It was actually my family doctor. He said, "Listen, you can play another 3 years and never ever get injured again. You can go out and slip on the pavement and, you know, you're paralyzed. You just never know what's going to happen." So decided to kind of spend the rest of the season just rehabbing and seeing what I was going to go or where was going to take me. And, you know, I started hanging out a little bit more in the athletic training room. I went to Albion College in Michigan, so small Division III school. They were just starting up their athletic training program there, so they had new staff members in there. They had new curriculum director and everything. So I just started spending a little bit more time in there. Obviously, I was rehabbing, and by the end of the football season, I think my heart knew where I was going with it. you know, so I decided to take the intro class the next semester and really enjoyed it, really excelled at it, and figured, you know, let's give this a try. And I had a really, really good college experience. We were kind of in that transition period where it was going from internship route to the curriculum-based education. So I was lucky enough to be one of the first classes to graduate from Albion with an athletic training degree. Went from there. I stopped playing football after my freshman year and graduated from Albion in 2005. And then I went to California University of Pennsylvania for my master's degree. So it's a full-year program. Got my master's degree in athletic training. And then I started my career after that. I started up at Oakland University. I was there for 4 years, and then I left. And now I am at Bloomfield Hills High School as the my fancy job title is the director of sports medicine. But I'm the athletic trainer for the high school. Done.
All right. Very cool. All right, Danielle. Now, Sean told me a little bit about your injury. You mentioned it in your intro there, car accident ending your playing career. But tell us as much as you can about your injury, again, start to finish.
So I was 18 years old, and a lady fell asleep at the car and hit me head on. So the resulting injuries that we found day one basically was I broke my right femur, my left tib fib, dislocated my left hip. I broke my hand and I had fluid on my abdomen. So the first night I was in the hospital, I had 3 surgeries. And then a couple days later, I had another 2. And then I've had a few since then. And so far, in the accident, I tore the labrum in my left hip. So I have a nice big scar because they did not have the orthoscopic surgeries then. So I've got a nice 14-inch scar. I have arthritis removed or like smoothed out a little bit in my right knee. And then I had a meniscus tear from trying to come back and play soccer at the age of 26. And young gun just tried to run through me. That didn't go so well. But I have a rod in my femur. I have a rod in my left tibia. I have some screws in my hip, some screws in my right femur. They removed the fluid on my abdomen, and they did not fix my hand, and it's nice and kind of bumpy and doesn't look so good.
I'll turn my mic off. All right. So last time we talked about athletic trainer injuries, I told mine where I just kind of hyperextended my knee. Yours is quite a little bit more entailed. But one thing that was kind of weird, you said you tore your meniscus when you came back to soccer at 26. Can you talk about that just a little bit more?
So I tried to get back into just playing like co-rec and, you know, some adult leagues and everything because I figured, oh, it's the game slowed down. I'm not going to go into any contact. And there was an 18-year-old for whatever reason in the over 25 league. He decided to try to run through me, and that did not go so well. I had a nice bucket handle tear.
Yeah, so it was just rec league. Okay.
Yeah, it was just rec league.
All right. Sean, I know rodeo can produce some pretty serious injuries, and I know you've had a few of your own injuries. So tell us, what is your athletic trainer injury?
All right. I tried to write some of these down because I can't even remember them all. Because I've had, I mean, just several little things here and there. Obviously, the lateral ankle sprains and stuff like that through college football and or through high school football and high school baseball and stuff like that. But kind of going through them, the one of my bigger or a couple of my bigger ones was a broken arm. Let me think here. Broken ulnar radius. And then I also tore my TFCC. Then I got into, I had two
hold up,
or
hold
a nasal.
Hold up. Is all this at the same time?
No. Well, these are all a lot of different ones.
You got to tell us how it happened.
Okay. Well, the broken arm was not really athletic related. That was on the farm. So that was just kind of a farm incident, but ended up turning into a TFCC issue later on, and that with sport, with coming into baseball, was an issue. Anytime I would swing and I would come through and I would make contact with the bat or with the ball, I would just get that sharp, like stabbing pain in my wrist. But that was from the fracture that I'd actually had by falling and being really klutzy, which I think that I was. I don't think I became an athlete until I was 26. So that's when I should have probably started doing stuff, doing athletics. Baseball, I also had a nasal fracture, two fractures of my nasal bone. I had two surgeries to fix that because I kept messing it up. And then with rodeo, there was ripped my cartilage between my ribs, the intercostal cartilage. Tore that, broke ribs on both sides. I remember the shoulder dislocation. I got hung up on a bucking horse and kind of turned down and hanging off the side of him, dislocated my shoulder. I also did that. That was actually when I was in college, and I was able to keep my shoulder up and pull myself up. And as I pulled myself up, I felt the burning in my bicep, and I had a not full bicep tear, but I had a really good, like, clinical bicep tear where you could see rolling on both sides. It was like mid belly. And I brought it to Leanne Price, who was our program director. And she was like, "That's cool. We just talked about that." So we got to use me as an example. Like I said, dislocated shoulder, right shoulder, that, you know, I'm certain there's probably a little bit of stuff going on in there. I've never gotten it fixed, or I've never done anything with it or gotten an MRI from it. Two or three AC sprains, one of which was probably less than 6 months ago, because I was doing handstand walks and being really stupid and I fell. The rib fractures were from getting stepped on by a horse. I got kicked up underneath a horse in a buck and shoot. And then I think Petty might remember this one. I know there's not really a partially torn ACL, but I have 30 to 50% of my laxity in my ACL from being stupid and jumping off of my house that was right behind her house. And so I don't have MRI to diagnose that one, but it's always been good. And we utilized it a lot with the students at Texas State, because you can get almost a somewhat positive Lachman's test on me, on my right knee. So it's kind of funny.
Sean, that's ridiculous.
Oh, and then I've for sure had 6, potentially 7 concussions.
You sure?
Yes. Only one of which I don't remember anything from it, though. So, and that was one in high school.
That's a lot of stuff. All right, so one that I've never heard of is torn cartilage off of the ribs. So tell me a little bit more about that one.
So where your rib actually, a lot of bull riders and like bareback riders will get this, and the cartilage will actually pull away. As those lower floating ribs, or I'm sorry, not the floating ribs, but as your lower ribs, 10, 9, somewhat come up, they will actually get ripped away from the cartilage and they will slide out, and you will actually feel them slid out. A lot of times, because of the amount of power that you're getting as you're getting flared back and pulled back out of off of a bucking horse or off of a bull, it's just so much that your body can't hold it. You can't pull it back together. It was uncomfortable. It was kind of just like a rib fracture. You can't breathe. You feel like you don't want to move, all of that stuff. So a lot of stupid stuff, honestly.
Oh yeah. Jumping off a house, I think counts as stupid stuff, but
yeah.
All right. So Danielle, let's talk about how, some of the rehab process for you, and then maybe how that's kind of translated into your job as an athletic trainer. So just talk about the length of the rehab, the hardest parts, and things like that.
Rehab started when I was in the hospital. So just doing daily activity stuff, being able to feed yourself, brush your teeth, go to the bathroom. They transitioned me into a rehab-only hospital. So you're dealing with people that have had strokes, heart attacks, all of that. That was one of the harder parts, just because, you know, I was 18, everyone else there is 50 and above. And, you know, they don't look like they want to do anything. They don't act like they want to do anything. And I'm still trying to just be able to feed myself and get from a chair to another chair, basically, you know, sliding over. After that, you know, I went home for a couple weeks and I had some home care, but really no rehab. And then they wanted me to go to a physical therapy place. And that was another difficult part, was I just didn't want to go. You get to the point where you're like, you almost give up, but you can't. So finally I decided to go, and it was probably one of the best decisions. You know, everyone bugging me to go, but going, just because the physical therapy place that I went to, almost everyone there was PTATs. So they understood me trying to come back to playing soccer. They wanted me to, you know, they tried to keep it as lively as possible for me. So those people are a godsend. And they helped me, you know, get back to at least easily doing daily activity stuff. I probably did total of 2 years of physical therapy. The first portion was like 8 months. And then after I had my hip done, it was another like 6 months. And then after I've had both of my knees fixed, and those were each a couple months. But right after my wreck is kind of when I decided to become an athletic trainer, mainly because of the physical therapy place that I went to. You know, that kind of helped me steer away from physical therapy into more of an athletic training role. Just because I wanted to help people that wanted to help themselves. So athletes, you know, usually don't have such a mindset of, you know, I'm kind of done with life. I'm done with everything. They want to get back to being active. They want to get back on the field, on the court, wherever. So all in all, I've probably done about 2 years of physical therapy, and kind of came full circle. While I was in undergrad, I worked for the physical therapy place that I went to. It was just kind of extra learning, extra help, basically. And then that's kind of when I started in the program.
All right, Sean said that you almost lost your foot through this process.
Yeah. So when the car hit me head on, it basically crushed my femur. And so I had like a probably about a 3 or 4 inch overlap where the bones just kind of came together, and my leg was a lot shorter. So that's part of why I have the rod. And then the door wrapped around my left leg. So it broke both the tib fib, but it also cut. So I have like a pretty nice scar that goes just about the entire diameter of my ankle. Did not somehow cut my Achilles, but it cut everything else. And I didn't have, for probably about 12 to 15 hours, I didn't have blood flow down to my foot. So for the longest time, they thought that they would have to, that I would lose my foot.
So basically your foot was hanging on by your Achilles?
Yeah.
Huh. Wow.
Petty, have you had to? Have you had to rehab somebody that's had anything like that, like had a wreck and stuff like that too, since you had that?
No, other athletic trainers have brought me in to talk to people that have had wrecks, but I've not had an athlete that. I've been at like PT places that have had it, but and they kind of, you know, they tell my story a little bit, and that kind of helps with motivation. But I've not personally done a rehab with somebody that's been in a bad wreck.
So we have, not me personally, but there's a private school in our area. This kid got out. There was a car accident. Him and another person. She was a physician. They both got out to help the person who was in the initial car accident, and they were hit as well. The physician, the doctor, she passed away about 3 days after the accident. And they just had a news story today about the student. He's starting his long-term rehab too. So he actually lost his, I think, right foot. But he was an all-state track runner. He's a junior in high school. So he's actually kind of going through all that stuff that you're describing right now. And they just had, I think it was either this morning or last night, they had kind of his progress of how he's doing. And it seems like a really good story right now. He seems to be very upbeat, but he did lose a foot in that accident.
Danielle, have you heard anything about the AT Cares program?
I have not.
So Bob and I just recently talked about it. And it's basically if there's like a catastrophic injury, then people reach out, like athletic trainers will reach out to other athletic trainers that have been injured. And just like you said, you know, they'll ask you to come in and share their story. It seems like something that'd be good for, you know, you to be able to just say, hey, I've been through a similar situation, and I made it through, and these are some of the things, but I'm here if you want to talk. And just that whole concept of being available for people to talk is really cool, and I'm glad we get to hear and share your story and see now you and John are connected, because he has one of his area athletes with a similar injury to yours, and maybe he can email you afterwards and get some ideas on way to speak to encouragement to that kid or to the other doctor that was involved in that accident. So,
absolutely.
All right.
I'm trying to look it up right now, just to.
And everything that she's done, like it, that I've ever been around. I mean, I'm gonna whatever, but she's really good with that kind of stuff too, and because she's dealt with so much. That she gets more of what PTs do. You know, there's a lot of athletic trainers that think they know what PTs do and that they know that setting where it's a lot different. And that's something that your athletes or that you can kind of share with your athletes. So she's always done a really good job with any athletes that we've worked with together or been around together of doing that. So.
Yeah. So
I think that's, sorry.
Go ahead, John.
I think that's one of the best parts about athletic trainers who've actually gone through injuries or, you know, have a personal experience with these things. We know what it takes to get through, you know, those catastrophic things or those, you know, in athletics, if you have an athlete who's at the top of their game and, you know, I had a soccer player last year. He had plantar fasciitis, never was injured in his life before, but it like emotionally, it took him about a month to get back from it. I mean, it was just, I don't want to say just plantar fasciitis, but it was enough for him to, you know, become depressed and, you know, have trouble with it. I think, you know, the fact that we've gone through certain things and, you know, like I said, personal experience, that helps us as a clinician help those student athletes or those athletes more, where sometimes you don't always get that with other clinicians.
Yeah, so to one up you there, Danielle, I'm not sure if you heard, my injury was a hyperextended knee playing tag with the kids. And so I was playing tag in my backyard just with my kids the other day, and I jumped back to avoid the tag, and the ground was muddy, and I slipped again and kind of hyperextended again. But this time I was a little bit more aware of what happened. It wasn't as severe. So, yeah, I tried dealing with that, huh? Hyperextended knee playing with kids.
The going back to the kind of talking about athletic trainers that have gone through stuff, but I mean, you even get that in college age kids. You'll get kids that are 20 years old that have come in and like they've never rolled their ankle, they've never pulled a muscle, and I mean they shut down. You're not just going to deal with that in the high school. You're not going to deal with those kids that are or in you would think that you might, but there are those people that will come in and they are an adult. And they have never had any type of injury in their life. And it's always great, I think. And I know every place that I feel like I've ever been, I get a little bit more respect, not so much respect to call it, but more of an understanding that, hey, Sean knows what you're going through. Sean's done this. Sean's played sports. Sean's had an injury before. So they'll talk to me and especially kind of working with rodeo guys, they understand that I know what they're doing and what they're going through. So
we call that street cred over in Detroit.
Street cred hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sean, I think you need a t-shirt with all those things listed on it, all the injuries listed on it. Oh. And just wear that underneath your normal athletic training clothes. And if someone asks a question, you just flip your shirt up there.
It would be embarrassing to try and put that against some of the guys that I work with, though, because like that's nothing. That's a year to some of them. Like, you know, I mean, going through an injury report of my injury report would be like, oh, well, that's a normal year for me, and I'm competing or something like that. So, but yeah, no, I could probably get that made. See if I can find one cheap around here.
I'll spray paint it for you. All right, John, let's talk about the rehab process. For you. You said you rehab for about a whole, like the rest of the season. So tell me about that.
So it was about 6 months, I want to say. So it was definitely through the end of the season into the next. I even started doing a little bit of spring ball, where I was starting to feel healthy. I just knew something wasn't right. I don't know if it was just emotionally I wasn't right there. You know, I had missed the whole football season. That was really, you know, the first time I had ever missed any football within, you know, I played through high school, played Little League, all those other things, never really missed a game. And here I am, you know, just the emotional shock of going into college and playing at that next level was tough. And then to deal with an injury was even more difficult. So I think a little bit emotionally I was behind. So when we start spring ball, I was, you know, worried about that injury. I was worried about, you know, trying to fit back in with the team. Where was my position at? You know, all those things were starting to play on me. So I continued to rehab into, I want to say the end of the school year, if not a little bit earlier. You know, we did a ton of muscle energy stuff. We did a ton of a lot of stuff to help with my muscles in the back of my neck. I just wasn't strong. I had lost about 6 weeks of mobility. I didn't wear a neck brace or anything, but for about 6 weeks or so, I just couldn't turn left or right. I had zero mobility in my neck. Everything had just kind of seized up on me. And, you know, 6 weeks of immobility just will kill somebody, you know, with range of motion, things like that. So, you know, I was behind with all those things. So we worked on a lot of those, you know, just trying to get my flexibility back, trying to get my range of motion back, trying to work on strengthening exercises. You know, with football, you know, strength and conditioning is big, but you really don't, at that time, we didn't really work on neck strengthening stuff. It was just bench, squat, deadlift, those types of things. So I had lost a little bit, you know, so by the time I finished, you know, I knew I wasn't going to play football again. And, you know, I kind of stopped rehabbing to more concentrate on my career, my academic career. And I'm still kind of dealing with those things to this day. So it's been 16 years now where I wake up with ridiculous pain in my left arm. It's almost every single day I wake up with pain or on a cold night. Cold nights absolutely destroy my neck and my back and my arms and my hands. You know, I still have full function, but the times I can't feel these fingers, it's way too many to count. So I work on it. You know, I'm now that guy in the gym that does the weird exercises with my neck. And, you know, I try to do some flexibility things with the ball. And, you know, if somebody's taking pictures of me or, you know, I wind up on some viral video of some weird guy doing an exercise, that's going to be me. But, you know, if I don't do them, I can't use my hands or I struggle. And, you know, I obviously don't want to be that way when I get older. So
one of my powerlifting buddies, who's a strength coach, he's like really into utilizing the ham curl for neck exercises. So just a thought, you know, just using that posterior. He loves that stuff. Now that will get you on YouTube, but
absolutely. I've seen those pictures there. I've seen the videos of it,
but it works.
Yeah.
So.
All right. So Danielle, I wanted to ask the same question, the continued rehab process. Like I said, I hurt my hamstring playing with the kids, so now I continue to use the foam roller, and I currently have like a hamstring weakness because I only did half of the rehab, and so it's still weaker than the other side, and so I still have some tightness on that tissue, and so I'm going back now and trying to do that work so that I can make it the same. But what are you having to do this far removed to continue to strengthen or maintain or alleviate pain?
One of my biggest things is staying hydrated. Because if I can stay hydrated, that helps with a lot of my joint stiffness, joint aching. That took me a few years to kind of figure out. And then just keeping general full body strength. I tried to do, a couple years ago, I got into some Olympic lifting. I don't do any like snatches or power cleans or anything like that, but I'll do, you know, deadlift, I'll do squats, you know, just kind of full body stuff just to maintain, because the more muscle that I can, within reason, but the more muscle I can kind of keep, the more it takes off the joints, and it keeps me a lot more like pain-free, especially when it comes to my knees.
So the lifting weights and the maintaining muscles is an important part of pain prevention or pain alleviation for you?
Yes. I just can't run anymore. I can't run long distance, so I'll go for like run walks that'll total up to a mile, mile and a half, but I can't run like I used to.
What about in the pool or something like that?
I'm not a big fan of water, so I really haven't utilized it as much as I should. I did a lot of aquatic rehab when it came to like pre-walking, just to kind of get my legs moving. try to build up a little bit more strength that way. But pretty much since I've been able to walk, I really haven't gotten into a pool or anything.
I gotcha. All right, so Sean, we've discussed some of your 100 injuries, but let's do the same thing. What are you still having to work on from some of those older injuries?
So for me, it's to keep mobility, strength, stuff like that. Because of my sport, which is bareback riding, I get a lot of neck pain as well. So I can completely understand John's, and I've never had anything looked at there. I'm certain that there is something there. I'm not ever going to probably look at anything because I don't like to go into doctors. But, and all my doctors know that because I've talked to them about it. But is maintaining strength and doing what we've done on all of our career and power and, you know, being able to be mobile and being able to move, because similar to what Petty was saying is, you know, if my diet is off, I'm a wreck. If my hydration, kind of more what she was saying, is off, I'm a wreck. If I don't move, if I don't get out and train, my body starts hurting. Everything hurts. My shoulders hurt, my hips hurt, my back hurts. Everything hurts. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's gone on there that I know why it hurts. So if I keep my mobility up, and I mean, I know that there was a long time in college, like I was training and I was thinking I was doing the right stuff and I wasn't, and I was probably hurting myself more. And then I kind of like really realized, and that's why I like squats so much. And I know, Jeremy, you and I, we kind of jar back and forth a little bit about bench press and squats, but I mean, that's why I love squats so much now, is because, you know, I know that it helps me. I know that it makes me better for what I can do and how I need to move. But if I don't do that stuff, man, I just go downhill and I can't move and I can't get into deep positions and I just ache. So I never really did like traditional rehab with most of my stuff, because a lot of them were, all right, just when you can go, start going. The couple that I did, they didn't do very, because it was so long ago. It was like when I was 12 and 13 years old, I was so young, I think. And they're like, oh, you're just going back to being a kid, for my wrist, when I broke my wrist broke my arm, they didn't do anything for me. And I now realize that there was a lot of stuff that I could have done. And I also know that there's stuff that I need to do because that's there. So those strength deficits, those mobility deficits and stuff like that for me is the biggest thing.
So on that note, I have been doing more weights with the leg lifts, or with the squats and lunges and the single leg deadlifts and those kind of things to help strengthen it. And so I'm learning. I don't enjoy in any way doing leg lifts, but I do them. And Danielle, I'm sorry that you don't enjoy swimming, but I freaking love swimming. Wherever it is, in the river, or the pool, the lake, if I can find my way into the water, I'm all about it. So
that's it. One of the things that for me also really helps, like I said, was diet. And I know Petty can attest to this. When I was in grad school, I was like ADD and ADHD, and probably in college too, man, I was all over the place.
Yeah.
And just my diet, because I think probably there's a little bit of post-traumatic stuff going on just because of my sport and what I did. Zoning down my diet of what I need and how I need to eat, because if I don't, man, I go off the grid, and I feel like crap, and my ADD comes back, and I'm like just locked. I can't lock into anything, and I can't finish anything and stuff like that.
So Danielle, have you found similar stuff? I know you said staying hydrated is key for you, but have you found that food makes a big difference?
No, I still kind of eat whatever I want. I know better, but I have not gotten into such a clean diet. I know Sean has kind of gone more clean and paleo and all that. I personally have not attempted it, so I don't know kind of one way or another. I just know right now, as long as I can keep my weight down and hydrate, that's kind of the biggest thing, you know, keep muscle. Those are kind of the three main components.
I got you. All right. So you mentioned you know, we've talked about your injuries, and on previous podcasts, I've talked about like the psychology of injury. And John mentioned it was hard for him to kind of find his way back into the team and kind of being scared. So talk a little bit about the psychology of your injury and your return to function. Were there any big obstacles where you were thinking, hey, I can't do this. I'll never be able to return. This is useless. I know you said you didn't want to go back to rehab, but talk a little bit more just about the psychology of it.
So we were in season when my rec took place. And so I had a very big support system when it came to family, friends, teammates. You know, one season was done. Everyone kind of does their own thing anyway. And, you know, that was kind of around the time that I did not, you know, I finally got out of the hospital and I just didn't want to go because my support system started shrinking a little bit. And I got to the point where I was like, well, I'm never going to get better. So what, you know, what's the point? And that's when my core group of people just kind of stepped up and, you know, kind of kicked me in the butt and said, you know, you need to go, you're 18, you need to get it right. I mean, it's hard to motivate yourself enough thinking that everything's going to be okay when you know that, you know, for the rest of my life, I'm going to have to maintain, you know, kind of everything as far as rehab, probably food soon here in my 30s. You know, just staying active within reason. But the psychology is huge because, you know, just even trying to play like pickup soccer, you know, anything, I psych myself out because it's like, you know, what happens if I get hurt again? You know, stuff like that. And it's hard to come back and it's hard to do things. But at the same time, I need to stay active to kind of be young. And once you kind of get back into it, it really does help. But, you know, that's one thing. You know, if I have an athlete that is injured right now, I try to keep them in every drill possible, keep them around the team, you know, as much as possible. Because if you separate, you know, I kind of got separated from my team. So if you get separated, you basically take one core value away from that athlete or that person. And so keeping the core values, you know, I was a soccer player. I still think I'm a soccer player and I'm not, but you know, trying to keep that with the injury and all of that kind of helps, you know, just with everything.
So you work with college women's soccer and you were a college soccer athlete, but right now you're talking about, you know, it's hard to go back in there and play because of the injury, the mental and the physical aspect. Do you find yourself out there on the field? Because whenever I go to work soccer games, and I'm out there all the time shagging balls, or you know, I'll even do like the ball boy stuff on the sidelines just because it's fun and it kind of keeps me involved and that stuff like that.
Oh yeah, I don't get into any of the drills or anything, but when it comes to injuries and stuff, I'll try to juggle with, you know, saying they can juggle, I'll try to juggle with them, you know, just something to kind of keep them active, keep me kind of going during practice, makes me feel a little bit better. So yeah, I try to get involved, you know, with practices and games as much as possible. I don't care if I'm shagging balls, it's kind of fun. So
exactly. I got to work on my step total each day. So that's a good way to get it. All right. John.
Hey, John.
Go ahead, Sean.
So because yours is a football injury and because there's been so many, you know, there's a lot going on in football right now. I mean, that's realistic with concussion and with injuries and with changing from two-a-days and stuff like that. Your children, what's your thoughts on that? What are your thoughts on football?
I don't have children. I'm not married. I've discussed this before. You know, I want my children to make their own mistakes. But this is one of those things where I would really have a serious conversation with them. Knowing what I know now, dealing with, you know, the things that I've gone through with football and, you know, I know it's not diagnosed, but I know that there's something lingering upstairs. You know, there's times where I'll forget simple things. Actually, I got a text message this morning about something I signed up to do this weekend. Completely forgot I did that. You know, I was diagnosed with ADHD about 2 years ago, and I never really realized I had that. But it's my inability to keep tasks in order or to remember certain things. You know, I work closely with an old NFL veteran. He's one of our football coaches. He played for 19 years, and we have honest and frank discussions about what he's going through right now. He's very, you know, he's, I think he's in his late 40s, if not 50 years old. He let his son play, but he felt it was safe enough to let his son play just because of how we react and deal with certain injuries now. But, you know, to see what he's going through on a personal level, it makes it hard for me to think about allowing my son or my daughter to play football. You know, that's probably a handful of years away if I do have any children. I don't know if I could answer that question where I would let them play football.
I just always like to ask because, I mean, that's a big one out there right now. I mean,
yeah,
there's a lot of stuff going on, and football has changed in the last 2 years, let alone 10 years.
Yeah,
so
right.
The game is different.
And I, you know, I think of myself more as a soccer guy. I work with a PDL team. So I love being around soccer. I've, you know, my community now, other people I am close with are mostly soccer players. You know, the soccer community is a big thing. You know, one person, you know, another person, you get to become really good friends with other people. And that's not to say that soccer is not a dangerous sport. I mean, you know, you're seeing a lot of studies coming out with these guys that have played for so many years. And, you know, obviously they took away the heading of the ball at such a young age. And, you know, for me to definitively say no to football, you know, I'd have to have the same conversation with pretty much any sport, really. I mean, the risk of injury is there everywhere. You know, so, yeah, it's a little bit higher with football because we know so much now. But, yeah, I would always have that conversation with my child or my wife or anybody.
One thing, and I know this isn't what the topic is, but I would look into is for the concussion stuff, is, and I've done some looking into it, is for the, I guess, mental aspect, the ADHD, that stuff, is the, I know Petty kind of said paleo, which I've done some paleo stuff, but keto, ketogenic diets, there's a lot of research now coming out of the, some of the military institutes and stuff like that, showing a lot of, and I know there's more that's going to come out in the coming months, is for the ketogenic diet and stuff like that. For they've used it a lot for kids for years that have had seizures, and they're starting to find it with dementia and stuff like that, and military individuals that have been dealing with you know, that post concussive issue due to explosions and gunfire and stuff like that. And I know there's some of the groups that are not linked with the NFL, but are kind of former NFL players that are doing some research into that as well.
That's interesting. Yeah. You know, we talked about diet here. You know, it is a huge part of everything we talk about. You know, when I'm seeing my athletes for concussions, you know, it's obviously we want to push water and talk about their diets a little bit more, make sure they're not getting those bad fats. They're eating more vegetables, you know, having a leaner diet, because it has shown that it helps. So
a lot of their issue there, and that's kind of where I have the problem too, is that brain degeneration comes, and there's some stuff out there that's showing from sugar, and we're just pumping them full of Gatorade after they're getting hit with on the sideline or after they've come off, and we're like, hey, are you okay? And we're doing a concussion eval on them, and we're pumping sugar into them. And that sugar is an inflammatory, causes inflammation. And that inflammation, I mean, what's it doing to the brain? We don't know. So it's right. Just kind of and I know I've listened to a lot of people talk about some of that stuff, but that's a kind of a soapbox.
All right, Sean, you didn't really get to answer that same question. Long-lasting rehab, things that you're having to do. I know you continue to wake up, work out, Sean, and do things like that. But what are some of the specific things you have to do to deal with those injuries?
Make sure I'm moving properly. Make sure my mobility is good. Like Petty said, squatting. I do a lot of Olympic lifting. I try and get my shoulder stability good because I know I have a shoulder issue. I know it's been out before. I've felt it almost come out in the past as well. So I know that I have to have that stability issue. not doing stupid stuff. That's part of my issue. It's like, and when you go to the psychology of it, it's never the psychology of, for me, is if I'm going to get hurt again, it's after I've gotten hurt that I just go into this like depression of, man, 3 days ago I had snatched 100 kilos and today I can't even put my arm up over my head because I was doing stupid hand walks and fell on my shoulder. So, it's just that stuff. Probably not doing stupid stuff is honestly. But I mean, my biggest thing is, and I know Jeremy, you and I have talked about this, is posture. I'm working on my posture and making sure that I have a really good posture, and that helps my neck, that helps my shoulders. I've bought the Donnie Thompson makes this. It's called the bow tie. It's to pull your shoulders back. When I drive, I will wear that. It'll help me keep that better posture and not ground and not slouch and not get that forward head. I'll have a lot of, my neck hurts and I won't be able to turn it if I don't wear that and if I'm not utilizing that. I have to do a lot of posterior shoulder work, so a lot of pulling exercises, because my ribs, I've had problems from the rib, and it'll just like hit me right in between my scapulas, getting those rhomboid muscles, and I'll just get that buildup of knot and that fascial stuff going on back there. So if I don't do my posterior work, the go muscles, like we've talked about, I'm dead in the water. So that's my stuff.
Yeah. I know the continued, oh, here, let me do this. And yeah, I have three boys. So continuing to wrestle and play tag and play rough and climb trees and jump fences, that's going to be just a part of my life until I guess I can't walk anymore. So hopefully I won't be jumping off a roof like Sean, but
there, I will not lie. It was in college, so there may have been some other reasons that happened, but we won't go into those.
Well, if there was a pool below, I might jump off the roof into the pool. I've done that before, and I probably
there was not a pool. There was no pool. We're talking about college housing here.
So. All right, let's go with the number one takeaway from your injury. And then we're going to come back and get how to get a hold of you. Sean, we'll start with you. So number one takeaway from your injuries.
Probably don't do stupid stuff. No, be prepared. Be prepared for anything. Try and train your athletes as a strength coach, as an athletic trainer, to be prepared for anything so that they're moving correctly, so that everything is in good position, so that that posture and position, you go back to that to day one from what you've been already telling them. So if I see a kid that is one of my student athletes coming in as a freshman, I tell him, man, hey, we've got some issue here. You got a valgus knee, you got your foot pronates. You don't have a butt and we need to work on your butt. That's going to prevent you from having injury. But then they go out and they do get injured. Guess what? Those are the same things that I'm going to be working on as an athletic trainer when they're rehabbing anyway. So trying to create posture and position in my athletes and have them in good position so that when they do get injured, because everybody's going to get injured, especially in my sport that I did, when you get injured, you come back from that and you're already on the healing train, I guess.
Okay, I got you. So setting them up for building a good foundation to set them up to return
Absolutely.
To a good foundation.
Absolutely.
All right, John, number one takeaway from your injury.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of the same thing, correct positioning and posture. You know, I talk about posture probably every single day. One of the things that my students always notice with me is my good posture. And it's not that I do it just to, you know, I don't know, to show it, but it's just kind of become a habit. You know, so the more it's a habit, the better I feel. You know, even an hour on, you know, when I'm doing physical work and physicals and doing paperwork, things like that, I hate that time because my posture is terrible. I try to work on it. I try to sit better, but it's just the nature of the beast when you're working on a computer. And that's kind of the reason why I'm an athletic trainer. So we don't have to do that type of stuff. But it's working on the posture. It's, I tell the kids every single time we do rehab, you know, this is your homework. And I show them how to stand up straight, sit in class like this. You know, when you're at home, try to sit up like this every once in a while. I know you're going to slouch, but at least make it more of a habit the more it's a habit, the better you're going to feel. You know, and one of the other things I took from my big injury and being an athlete is to have empathy and to understand the emotional impacts that student athletes go through. You know, like I said, that one athlete, he was a soccer player. He's playing in the MLS now. And this was last year that he had his first injury. So lucky him, but you know, at the same time to be able to understand that this psychological process that the student's going through or the athlete's going through, helps you kind of deal with their injury a little bit better. You know, if you don't have that, or if you don't understand that, you know, it's going to be a little bit more difficult to deal with those injured athletes, you know, in the future, but the ability to do that helps you be a better clinician. So.
All right. And Petty.
To piggyback John, you know, the empathy behind it, just kind of understand where they're coming from, but also teaching them. You got to teach them, you know, how to maintain for the rest of their life. You know, some athletes, especially back injuries or, you know, any injury really, they're going to have to maintain a certain level for the rest of their life. And so just kind of teaching the athletes, you know, this is what you're going to have to do to be prepared. You know, even if it's just sitting in class or getting prepared for practice or games or, you know, a job after you leave. But teaching to me is kind of one of the bigger things, is just because they don't understand, you know, you tell them to do something, they may or may not do it, but they don't understand why. Where if you teach them, even if they just regurgitate it right back to you, that's a little bit of, you know, learning. So
taking the time to explain why.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
Right. Teddy, have you ever pulled your shorts up and been like, are you serious? This is an injury? Look at this thing.
I had an athlete just the other day ask, what's on your ankle? And I was like, are you serious? I've told this story. So they don't pay attention, but anytime you can even break that barrier just by 1%, I'll take it.
Yeah, I think, again, my injury, I did break my nose jumping into a pool one time. I did a flip.
Ah, see?
Yeah, see, my legs hit the water and my torso was going forward, and so they bam, smash. So I do have like two injuries, I guess. But just having the opportunity to share.
At least some of you kept your shorts on.
Yeah. Just having the opportunity to share my story, but hear other people's story. I think Jared Plummer, he's actually a huge ECU fan. He's out there at a lot of the baseball games. He's a Donjoy rep out there. You know him?
Yeah, I work with him a lot.
Yeah, and so one of the things that he said was his biggest tool was his network. And so now if I have a kid that, you know, has a supraspinous strain, I can, hey, you know, let me just call this guy, John. He had the same thing and he's dealt with it. Or, you know, hey, let me have somebody that jumped off a roof and hurt themselves. Let me call Sean, right? Or somebody that's been in a car accident. Let me call Danielle. And so just looking at that network, and I mean, obviously you guys are on here willing to share your story with us. So I think being open and willing to share, and then also asking for help. So utilizing that network, like Jared said, is probably my biggest takeaway.
It's like you and Bob. Go ahead, John.
I was just going to say, I think I'm going to have to fly Sean out for that Monday after spring break just to deal with some of those athletes.
You get the spring break.
The UDIs.
The unidentified
drunken incidents. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. You get those that were, especially in the college setting, you definitely get a lot of those. My knee kind of hurts, and you realize you tore your ACL because they showed up and they had been skiing, or, well, the doctor up there just told me I jammed it a little bit. Oh, yeah. This post spring break is always a good time. But no, Jeremy, I think it's kind of what you were saying was it's similar to what you and Bubba were talking about yesterday about just having people that know a little bit different things about something, about anything. Whether that's to help an athletic trainer or whether that's to help your students are going to gain from that, as well as, you know, we can all help each other because we now know more people. We know each other. People hear us talk and at NATA, people are going to walk up and be like, hey, you're the guy that jumped off the roof. And people are going to walk up to Petty and be like, wow, that's a great story. Or John, because, you know, he's actually was a college athlete and was playing and injured himself playing. So, and I think everybody here is going to be okay to talk about that. So.
All right, Sean, you're already up. So someone wants to get a hold of you, reach out to you, or, you know, I use you as an example of what not to do.
It's probably a better case. Sean Reedy ATC at Gmail, or Sean Reedy _ ATC on the gram and the Twitter.
All right, John.
How's that?
Oh, wow. my email is jcieckoo@bloomfield.org. That's my email. My Twitter is John, JohnCiecko. So just my name. And then Instagram, if you want to see a ton of pictures of my dogs, it's CIECKO3 on Instagram. I mean, a lot of pictures of my dogs.
All right. And Petty.
My email is DeeKayPetty@gmail.com. And then Twitter and Instagram are both the DeeKayPetty.
All right. One more time. That was pretty fast.
DeeKayPetty. I also have a lot of pictures of my dog on there.
Rain.
Yep.
I got the enjoyment to live with Rain for a year, so it was a good time. She's a good dog, I'll admit.
Yep. Getting old.
All right. On Twitter, I am Mr. Jeremy Jackson, but obviously sportsmedicinebroadcast.com has all the ways to contact me. So again, this is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/ATinjuries2, because it's the second round of athletic trainer injury stories we've done. And then I can't forget to mention schoolhealth or sportshealth.com/SMB, where you can register to win a gift card from School Health. So check that out. Sign up there. Even if you've done it before, continue to register. We do the drawing every other month. So check it out. An opportunity to win. I think it's up to a $100 gift card from School Health for something for you or for your school. So check that out. Register at sportshealth.com/SMB. So for Jeremy, Danielle Petty out at ECU, John Seco out at Bloomfield High School, Sean Reedy, currently at AOKC doing the rehab specialist or recovery center. I mean, sorry, recovery specialist. That's going to wrap it up for the Sports Medicine Broadcast. Thanks, guys.
Where's everybody from?
Originally or like right now?
Both. Let's go. Let's just fill up the time.
Originally, I'm from Illinois. Now I'm in North Carolina.
Oh, all right.
I am also from Illinois, Missouri, wherever. Now I'm in Houston, Texas. I was at Rice for several years. And Petty and I actually went to undergrad together. And then she lived in the house behind mine. And she got the idea to follow, or not follow, I guess, but come to Texas State as well. So we went to undergrad and grad school together. I've gotten to annoy the heck out of her a lot.
This is true.
All right, Danielle, when you talk, you either, I don't want you to lean in too much because then it'll look really weird because you'll get like a full nostril shot. But because they have their microphones, they're a good bit louder. So you're,
do you want to put headphones in?
You can try and see. I don't want it to like limit you too much and you'd be pulling the phone off.
Is that a little bit?
Jeremy, in post-production, can you add a beer to her? Or?
You know, I think there is like a visual effect thing I could do.
If Snapchat can do it.
I was going to say, can we do this through Snapchat? Yeah.
The best thing is when you add the beard from Snapchat and try and add it over my beard. And you can still see my beard sticking out from under the beard that they had.
So just randomly, as we're talking about Snapchat, I was playing with it last night, and there's one like of the filters where it makes you a dog, and your eyes and your mouth move with that. And so my 2-year-old son was just loving being the little puppy dog on the screen, turning his head and giggling. And it was the best.
Oh yeah, that is the best for me, for the nieces and nephews. Get them bored. If they're bored, you entertain them for 30-40 minutes. Snapchat filters are the way to go.